public health departments and researchers enlist map makers to better understand patterns of disease and health. Pulse reporters Tanya English and Zach Seward are working on a series of stories about the modern-day application of maps and medicine. But first, Tanya went to visit some very old maps.
So, Tanya, where are you taking us here?
Hey, Zach. I started in Cambridge, Massachusetts, not far from Harvard Square, and a short walk past one of the university's iconic arched gates is North America's oldest map collection.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Lamont Library and Harvard University. My name is Bonnie Burns. I am the GIS librarian for the Harvard Map Collection.
Librarian Bonnie Burns has more than 400,000 maps to choose from.
I do a lot of different things. My goal is to get the geographic information into the hands of researchers.
Using geographic information systems, or GIS, to make decisions is a relatively new profession. But mapping as an art, and especially as a science, that's an ancient pursuit. Harvard has examples from as early as 1511.
We have maps of the heavens. This is a Mercator celestial globe from the 1540s. We have maps of hell. This is Hell, Michigan.
One map from the 1880s depicts the march of civilization.
It's just the what they saw as the important moments in time shown on these streams. Yeah, so this is the Roman Empire. We're starting off with the Greeks here. It's a lot of fun to look at.
Wait, hold on a second. Can the rest of us see this one too?
Definitely. All the maps I'm going to talk about are online at whyy.org/thepulse.
Okay,
so this particular one, Sebastian Adams' map of history, is a foldout. And when you look online, you can zoom in and zoom out across 22 feet of different text and pictures. Burns says this map is a good lesson in the power of the map maker to shape a story.
It starts off with Adam and Eve, and it goes to the year of the birth of the man who made the chart.
So maps are supposed to be backed by science, but often they're full of both unintentional and deliberate bias.
Okay, so I think I get that, but can you give me an example of this bias that you're talking about here?
Okay, so let's say I'm a southern gentleman.
All right, if you say so.
So I'm heading out on my horse and carriage to survey my vast land holdings. I would definitely need a map. In antebellum times, I chip in with my neighbors to produce a map of the region and then get a little something in return.
A cartographer would go to a county and say, I'm going to make this map of your county, and go to the wealthier, more well-known citizens and say, for $500, I'll include a picture of your house on the map. Prominent citizens paid to have that put there.
Well, I won't have time to show you everything I've laid out, but why don't you come over here and I'll start to...
About halfway through the tour at Harvard, research librarian Joseph Garver took over.
I'm the curator. If people have very involved questions, they usually come to me.
One of Garver's favorites is a 16th century atlas. It's a full-color rendition of the work of ancient Greek geographer Claudius Ptolemy.
Here's one of Asia, Africa, and here's the New World. These were all done as woodcuts, and all of the color would have been added by hand. And because these have been closed up for almost four centuries now, not exposed to the light or to too much humidity, the colors are still almost as vibrant as they were 400 years ago.
Ptolemy lived in Alexandria around 150 AD and mapped the world from his vantage point as a European in Egypt.
Northern Africa, of course, they knew Europe very well. As they got into Asia, it became vaguer and vaguer. So here's North America, South America, and some cannibals down here in South America, apparently.
So a map is often an argument, an attempt to support a particular point of view.
Okay, let me turn around. Show you some of the other kinds of atlases we have.
In the 1730s, the mayor of Paris, Michel Etienne Turgot, commissioned a series of maps to promote his city's reputation to European elites.
Shows every building in Paris in 1739. And you could actually put it together. If you assembled all of these 20 or so sheets, it would cover quite a large wall.
The Turgot Atlas offers dozens of bird's eye views of the city.
So here's Notre Dame here, the Seine River. It's even showing boats in the Seine.
Wow, so this one's pretty cool. I'm actually looking at it right now on our website. It's kind of like an old-timey Google Earth of Paris. But did you get to see any old maps that were specifically used for medicine?
Actually, not at the Harvard Map Collection. But it turns out to see maybe the most famous map in medicine, I only had to travel across town to the College of Physicians of Philadelphia.
Gotta be careful, huh? Very, because you can see almost every foldout like this has a little Rip.
The map is included in the 1855 edition of On the Mode of Communication of Cholera.
And it creaks.
The text includes Dr. John Snow's big theory that cholera, which was sweeping through London at the time, was spread by water contaminated by fecal matter. Any epidemic, especially back in Snow's time, must have been pretty vile. But cholera was especially nasty. Patients vomited a lot and suffered watery diarrhea. Here's a movie clip that plays up John Snow's legend. He was trying to convince his colleagues that bad water was making people sick, not bad air, or what was called back then, miasma.
Every physician in the world agrees that cholera is of a miasmic nature.
With all due respect, sir, we cannot let our narrow views prevent us from discovering new truths.
This disease is of a miasmic nature.
People are dying!
So the truth is a little less dramatic, but still, Annie Brogan says...
So Jon Snow was actually super famous.
In his time?
He was, because he was a pioneer in anesthesiology. He used ether and chloroform.
To prove his point, Snow went door to door in his London neighborhood, trying to figure out where people got their water.
And that's where the maps came in.
Modern cartographers say when you look at data, spatially, you learn things you wouldn't have known otherwise. Snow figured out that lots of people who died lived near a water pump on London's Broad Street. And to make his case, he put the information on a simple black and white map. There are black lines stacked up in front of different addresses. And each line stands for one cholera death.
And you see they're all kind of focused around this one pump on Broad Street. Now, the thing about the Broad Street pump is that the water from this particular pump was very cold, and it tasted good, and it was even a little bit fizzy. So people would travel from other neighborhoods and other areas to come get their water from this pump.
So London's cholera epidemic may have been already waning anyway, but the local parish council was convinced by Snow's map, and they removed the handle of the pump. And soon after, the number of deaths in the area slowed down. Eventually, the pump handle was replaced. So John Snow's grand experiment may not have worked out in his time, but his map, it did become a legend.
And I have to say that even though, you know, there's some pretty good evidence in here, the authorities in London didn't quite take to his theory because they just didn't want to contemplate the fact that their citizens were essentially eating poo. So the miasma theory still kind of held sway for a little bit afterwards, yeah.